We're holding on page 40 in Bavamitsia Osvov. To round out, by the way, yesterday we had to finish a little bit quickly about this whole matter of Prika and Te'ina. First of all, it was actually yesterday's Rambam as well, Shalosh Prakim. But in addition, also, we talked about briefly, the Gemara had talked about that if you have a Sone, if you see an enemy whose donkey is collapsing under its burden or needs to be reloaded, then he takes precedence, we said, even if he only needs his donkey reloaded, and there's somebody else needs it unloaded with a Saba Lachaim involved, then we said you still have to help the enemy first to the Lokofus Yisrael. So we mentioned, I mentioned yesterday that Tosfos makes a point that this is not necessarily the kind of Sone, since the Gemara is saying Lokofus Yisrael, that implies we're not necessarily talking about the type where the Torah says you're allowed to hate him. The Gemara explains in Psachim that, how is the Torah even talking about a Sone? Since when are you allowed to hate a fellow Yid? And the Gemara explains there that, let's say, you saw him doing an Aveda, but it was only you, so you don't have enough evidence to take him to Beis Din. Nevertheless, you're allowed to hate him for it. And that would be the kind that the Pasuk is talking about. However, Tosfos says over here that when we said that the point is Lokofus Yitzroi, that implies that you have no business hating him. Well, then it can't be that one. So Tosfos says it must be Sam, that a person against what the Torah says hates another Yid and nevertheless was saying that he should go and help him Kedir Lokofus Yitzroi. The Rambam actually finished off in these halachas yesterday and explained differently. It does actually mean the kind of Sona where the Torah entitles you to hate him. Nevertheless, he's Fort a Yid. He's Fort basically a and therefore you have no business leaving him by the side of the road, as much as you may be justified in hating him for the Averis he does, you still have, like the Alter Rebbe says in Periklam Beis Tanya, on the one hand you have to hate for the Averis, but on the other hand you have to have Rachmanus for the fact that he's a Yiddish, that he has a Yiddish in the Shema, and therefore in this case go and help him. The Rambam doesn't seem to explicitly say what the point is then in that case, how is it Lokofus Yitzroi, but Pashtus, we could answer that it means, in other words, the Rambam is saying Im Heyos, that you have a right al pi Torah to hate him, but nevertheless that can easily cross over into something personal, and therefore you need to help him over here in order to make sure that fine line is kept. What?
The basic thing.
Yeah.
You're not hating him.
You're not hating him, you're hating the Rasha boy, right.
Why did you say a lower level of Sony for a person that you haven't sent John Malachim to three times?
Because there's not that much of a chiddush that you should go in there, and if they didn't speak for 3 days machmas eva, yeah, maybe that is enough to be considered a sonif for purposes of the halacha, or maybe it needs to be something more than that, yeah.
What about the Moisa, for instance? There is still the union of Tzavah Lichayim. Which one is?
Right. So the Gemara actually discusses the point. The Gemara discusses, and again, it was in yesterday's Rambam. What if the cargo belongs to a goy and the donkey driver is a yid, or the other way around? So you have, and if the donkey belongs to a yid, if it belongs to a goy, and the packages are a yid, etc. You have the various possible combinations. Yeah, Tzav Bal Chaim is a factor. What we're saying over here, though, is that sometimes there are other things that are even more important than Tzav Bal Chaim, namely the Lokofus Yitzroi. So the Mishnah says, having talked about that, so the Mishnah begins by talking about the dinim of the Mishnah says that the whole perek has been talking about the dinim of Hashava Saveda, and you also have the relevant dinim as far as Prika and Te'ina, as far as who takes precedence. So the Mishnah says, Avidase Vaveda Sav, if a person has lost an object of his own, and his father has also lost an object, Avidase Kedemis, and his lost object comes first. The Gemara explains over here, and mention it briefly, earlier in the parak, that the shalcha koidim, that your own possessions come first. So therefore, so he has a right to set aside the fact that his father lost something and go look at and deal with his own. And similarly, if he lost something, and so did his Rebbe, shaloi koidim, then also his comes first for the same reason. However, avedas aviv, avedas rabbi. However, if his father lost something and his Rebbe lost something, then shall Rabbi Kedemis. Then his Rebbe comes first because his Rebbe is more important to him. His father brought him into this world, but his Rebbe, who taught him the Chochma of Torah, brings him to Chaya Olam Haba, and therefore that's more important, and therefore he needs to to help his Rebbe first, even ahead of his father. However, if his father himself is a Talmud Chacham, then his father's then his father's lost object comes first, because then his father has both advantages. He's a Talmud Chacham, and he brought you into Olam Hazeh, and he's also helping you come into Olam Haba. That's the Gersa that we have in front of us in the Mishnah, is that as long as the father is a Chacham, there are a number of Rishonim that have the Gersa that this exception would only be if the father is a greater Talmud Chacham than his Rebbe. But otherwise the Rebbe would still go first, because his knowledge of Torah is greater, and therefore that's more bringing him Chayel Mabo. Continues the Mishnah. Hoya Ovi V'Rabbe Noisin Masui. Suppose that his father and his Rebbe were both carrying a heavy burden. Maniachas Shal Rabbe V'Achach Maniachas Shal Ovim. Then also he should first help his Rebbe and then his father. Now here it actually doesn't mention the exception about his father as a Chacham. It sounds like in this case, always he helps his Rebbe first. Because for one thing, here you're dealing with Tsar de Gufa, with the Aveda, it's only a matter of Tsar of his moment. Here you're talking about Tsar of his actual Guf, so therefore his Rebbe is going to take precedence. Then another case. No, that's the point. In other words, the question is, the Mishnah mentions three cases over here. The Mishnah is mentioning about a case of a lost object and the case of a burden, and we're going to have a case where both of them were captured and are jailed by Goyim. Why does it have to mention all three of them? So the Rosh actually explains that each one has slightly different dinim in terms of the precedence between the father and the Rebbe, and therefore it has to list them separately. So according to him, at least, it's not repeating it, because in fact there was a difference in this regard. The Pashtus, we could say that if it was a matter of that it applied to all three of them, then it would put that point, the Olam Chacham, over here at the end of the Mishnah after all the three cases. So that implies that it doesn't necessarily apply across the board. Suppose that his father and his Rebbe were both captured by Goyim. Then again, he does Pidyon Shvuyim for his Rebbe first, and then for his father. However, again, if his father is a Chacham, then he first ransoms his father and then his Rebbe. Here, actually, even the Rosh does not have any different Gersa than we do. So he says it means here, as long as his father is a Chacham, then he's able to take precedence. Because here you're talking about there's danger to their lives. The Gemara points out in Bava Basra that being captured by Goyim is the worst of all things, because a person is exposed to all the possible dangers over there. He might die of hunger or thirst. He might be beaten to death. He might be this, that, the other. So therefore, Pidyon Shvuyim, which is why Pidyon Shvuyim is one of the greatest mitzvahs. So therefore, as long as his father is a Chacham, even if he's not of the caliber of his Rebbe, then that's reason enough to put him first. So it comes out, according to the Rosh, actually, that there's a different din in each of these three cases. It comes out in the first case, as far as the Aveda, in order to do his father's first, his father has to be a greater Chacham than his Rebbe. In the case of the burden, it's always going to be his Rebbe first. In the case of Pidyon Shvuyim, it's going to be as his father, B'chlal, Talmud Chacham, or not.
Or the same prison.
Yeah.
Son comes and redeems the baby first. How's the father going to feel?
It's a good question, but the fact remains. I mean, you know what? It's not the only example. I mean, consider, for example, the Mishnah in Hodias that tells us that for example, Koyin Koydim Lelevi, Levi the Yisrael, there's a whole order of precedence there also. Suppose you have both a Koyin and a Levi in jail, then you only have enough ability to ransom one of them, then you ransom the Koyin first. How is the Levi going to feel? The fact is, that's how it is. There has to be a certain order of precedence.
It's not related,
but nevertheless, this point still remains we have these rules: who's going to go first and then not. Ben Yehoyada actually has a whole different explanation of where, again, the Rosh is saying that the reason you need all three of them is because there are different dinim in each of the three of them. Ben Yehoyada gives a long explanation of a different reason why the Mishnah has to mention all these three things. For one thing, he says, for example, he talks about when they're captive in jail, you would say in general you would figure he needs to do his father first. Otherwise people are going to think maybe this guy is not even legitimately his father. Maybe he's not bothering ransoming him because he knows the truth that this guy is not really his father or something. So uh, Torah. So therefore, so nevertheless, we have to be told by Shivya that still the Rebbe goes first, and then he goes through and shows how you have a tzrichasa among all three of them. Each one of them has features that the other one doesn't. One is tzar of the goof, one is tzar of mammon, one is that he's in danger. And again, you have this point about that people may think that this isn't his father, etc. And nevertheless, the Mishnah is telling us that
only saying in jail in Aviv Chacham.
So we're saying if Aviv Chacham, then his father comes first.
If you have the chash that maybe he's not his father, even if he's not.
No, we're not saying obviously he doesn't actually have such a chash, but the point is that Ben Yoyada is saying if he goes and redeems and ransoms his Rebbe first, people are going to think there's going to be laws of Sfasayim, there's going to be tongues that are going to start wagging, well, this is his father, why didn't he ransom him? Maybe because Epsher not, or maybe he hates him or something. And nevertheless, the Mishnah is saying don't pay attention to that and go ransom the Rebbe first. That's what we're saying. Only if Aviv Einar Chacham, right? Evidently, a person in those days was expected to know where he is and where he is in knowledge of Torah relative to another one. And we have other examples like that. You know, you have the Chachamim and the Talmidim by the Sanhedrin, for example, would sit in order of their knowledge. So apparently, there was some kind of there's some kind of defined way that you can say. And nowadays, when we have so many printed Sfarim and all, it's a lot harder. It may be a lot harder to tell because you can have quite a lot of people who show themselves off and seem to be very knowledgeable, but it's really because you know they have good Google skills, you know. I've heard it said, by the way, a cute vort on that. You know, you have the famous expression Tamen Chacham Ikri Shabbos. So they say. So I heard somebody explain why. Because on Shabbos you can't use it. You can't search on the internet. So if you have somebody who taken knows where to find something without doing searches like that, then you know he deserves to be called Tamen Chacham. Yeah.
Well, the Rebbe's depends on the Chokmah. What about the Midas? Make any difference?
What about the Midas? I mean, we usually assume that Chochmah and Midas go together, that if a person is worthy of being called a Chocham, then he also has the proper Midas. You're right. If you have the occasional, the rare case, like Doeg and Achitofel or something, who don't, well, the Mishnah is not addressing that, maybe because it's too uncommon to...
would be learning from that Rebbe anyway.
That's, this is also true, right? You're not supposed to learn from a Rebbe who has bad midas. This is also true, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, back then, when Torah Shebaal Peh was Baal Peh, then therefore it was a lot, the pastures, it was a lot easier to know who was actually the greater Talmud Chacham and who was not. Okay. So the Gemara says, Menahani, merely where do we know this from? The first two cases of the Mishnah, that if he lost something and his father or his Rebbe lost something, then his comes first. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amar Kro, because the Pasuk says, Efes ki lo yivcha evyon. However, there will not be any poor person among you. Pashat Pshat, you read the Pasuk, it means the Torah is saying that you have a mitzvah of Hashmatas Ksafim, of forgiving all debts come the end of Shemitah. However, the Torah is saying, if you do what the Eibishter wants, there won't be any poor people among you, and therefore nobody's going to have to borrow from one another. But the Gemara is, Rav is doushening it, it means, lo yiyah b'cha, there shall not be you among any poor person, meaning, shalcha kodim l'shal kol adam. So your possessions, your items take precedence over somebody else's. Because in other words, you have to be lo yiyah b'cha evyon, make sure not to become poor. And that means, in other words, you lost something of value, then you should go look for it first. However, kol ha-mekayim ba'atz mekach, nevertheless, if a person is mekayim exactly that on himself, a person does have to, after all, go, l'fnim mishuras hadin. He shouldn't always say that mine comes first. Where there's a hefsed mechiyach, where there's a clear and obvious loss, then yeah, he should put his ahead. But if he's always being medactic on it, then if he's taking off himself the whole concept of gmilus chasadim and tzedakah, so kol ha-mekayim ba'atz mekach, a person who always sticks to, a person who always insists on following this exact rule, Shali Kodim, Soif Validekah, in the end is going to come to this kind of thing where he himself is going to be poor and require tzedakah. Marshall gives a different explanation. Mekayim Ba'atz Mekach, usually we use the word Mekayim to refer to somebody who is doing something to fulfill what it says in a posse. So if he goes and says, you know what, why am I dealing with my lost object first and not my father's and not my Rebbe's? Because I want to be Mekayim, that posse. Well, then, I want to be Mekayim that Pasuk, that I shouldn't be poor, then I'll Tiftach Pel HaSotan. He's opening up an opening for the Sotan to accuse him in Shemayim. You know what? Maybe he does deserve to be poor. So that's also Sof Bali Dekach. So he winds up coming to this kind of thing. Iyun Yaakov says another meaning as well. You know, you have like the line in Pirkei Avos, Al Da Teif Da Tfuch V'Seif Metai Fayich Yitzurfon, that, you know, what a person did tends to come around to him. So if he acts that way towards his father or his Rebbe, mine always comes first ahead of yours, then eventually when he has kids or he has Talmidim, they're going to treat him the same way. Tana Rabban, we learn in a Braisa. Rabbi Sha'omru, when we talk about his Rebbe in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shalimde Chochma. We mean his Rebbe in the sense of the one who taught him Chochma. Now we have like this, we're going to distinguish throughout this piece of Gemara between you have Mikra, which is Tanakh, Mishnah, which is the basic halachas, the basics of the halachas, more or less as we have it in the Mishnah. You think about it, the Mishnah just gives us the halachas and machloikas in about them sometimes, but it doesn't give us usually the source where we know the din from. It doesn't tell us all the particular cases where it applies and what the reasoning is behind it and so on and so forth. All that kind of thing is what we call the Hil Chochma. And also in the Sugya, we're going to call it Gemara or Talmud. So when we talk about his Rebbe, we mean the Rebbe that taught him Chochma. V'loy Rabbi Shalimne Mikro Mishnah, but not his Rebbe who just taught him Mikro Mishnah. They're not considered to be his Rebbe in the sense that they should take precedence over his father. Because Chochma is where you can actually learn to decide practical halacha. Nowadays, you know, we're deep into the time of the Achronim. We don't pass them directly from the Gemara anymore. We look at what the Rishonim and Achronim have to say on the subject. But in principle, the idea is that once you knew the methods of analysis of the Gemara and the generations immediately after the Gemara was written, you could pass them directly from it. And therefore, so that's considered to be the Iker of Torah in that sense. As opposed to Mikra and Mishnah, where you don't learn, first of all, Mikra and Mishnah are Mikra was already written. Mishnah is formulated very briefly, and maybe it was written by then, and therefore there's not such a, it's not such an accomplishment when somebody else teaches you that. So if you give it a mayor, that's what a mayor says. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, kol shed roi chochmose hemenu, any Rebbe that he got most of his chochma from, even if you have a person, let's say, who's only learned Mikra, if most of the Mikra they learned is from a particular Rebbe, then that will be considered his Rebbe for purposes of this halacha. And the same thing with Mishnah, and the same thing with anything else. Rabbi Yossi goes even further. Even if a person enlightened somebody's eyes and informed him the explanation and the reasoning behind one Mishnah that he didn't know until then, Zehu Rabbi, that would be considered his Rebbe. So Rava says, I'll give you an example of that. For example, Rav Schoira, the Asbaran Zuhama Lisron. He explained to me, there's a Mishnah in Kalim that mentions a Kali called a Zuhama Lisron. And Rava didn't know what it was. Now Rav Schoira explained to him that Rashi explains it's a large spoon that they Zuhama means likely the froth and the stuff that floats to the top of a cooking pot. So a Zuhama Lisron would be like a large spoon, like a soup ladle that you use to move that frothy stuff and whatever to the side so you can get to the actual good soup and stew. So the Mishnah talks about it over there in terms of Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. There's a different explanation that a Zuhama Lisron is sort of like a spork. It's a combination. It's a kavi that one end of it is a spoon for stewing the soup and the other end is a fork for taking out the vegetables or whatever. The Mishnah talks about it in terms of it's a multifunction kavi, and therefore if one side is damaged, is the other part still makabel terma? The point is, Rabbi didn't know the meaning of this phrase and Rav Schoira explained it to him. So therefore he's saying in that sense, according to what Rav Yossi is saying, Rav Schoira would be considered my Rebbe. Another example. Shmuel one time tore his clothing in Avelus about a certain Talmud Chacham de Azbere, who explained to him the following Mishnah in Masechta Talmud. Echad yored la'amas ha'shechi, one goes down to the ama of the armpit, the echad peseach kevan, and the other one opens directly. Rashi explains like this. The Mishnah there in Talmud is describing like this. The doors of the Heichel were locked at night. Now, in the morning, they need to open them. The halacha is, in fact, that if a shlomim is shechted before the doors are open, then it's possible, and it's machlokas, we've shown him whether that applies to other korbanos as well. So in any case, before they brought the Talmud Shal Shachar, they need to make sure the doors are open. but they're locked from the inside. So the way they would do it is, so one of the Kohenim in particular, Rashi says from the Mishnah over there, it's the one who the one who's going to do the Dishun Mizbeach HaPnimi, who's going to clear off the ashes from the Mizbeach HaPnimi to prepare it for today's Ksurdas. So he would take along with him two keys. Now, how does he get into the Heichel? So you have on the side of the Heichel, there were these little rooms surrounding the Heichel. They're called Toyim. Many times you'll see in diagrams based on the way that the Tosfos Yom Tov and other Mefarshim understand that as you had one next to the other, you had five of them on one side, five on the other, one in the back, and then you had three stories of them, and they looked like little cells one next to another. The Rambam understands it differently. They're basically long, narrow. They're long, narrow passageways between one wall and the next. The Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBechira explains that there were multiple walls of the Heichel with spaces of several of varying numbers of amas between them. Three amas here, four amas there, and each one of those things is called a ta. In any case, the way that it's called a ta, which is a word in Hebrew for a small room that adjoins a main building. In modern Hebrew, when they use the word ta to mean a cell, it comes from the same thing. It's from these little cell-like rooms. Anyway, so the way it would work is now like this. To get into the toyim, there was a small side door called a pishposh, from which you would walk into the first ta, and from it you could walk to the next one, and so on and so forth. What they used the toyim for doesn't clearly say. They may have used them for the treasures of the Bis Mikdash. They may have used them for extra kalim. They may have used them for who knows what. We don't know exactly. In any case, so you wanted to get into the heichel, you would go in through the ta to the side over there, and then you would then from there you have another. Then from there you have a doorway that leads you into the heichel behind the main doors, and then you can open the doors from there. So the Mishnah describes. Again, the Kohen is taking along two keys for the purpose. One of them is the lock, the first lock that he has to unlock to get into the tub. He has to there's a hole in the wall. The lock is on the inside of the door. He has to reach all the way. He has to reach through a hole all the way up to his armpit. He has to reach very far in, as far as he can, and then he'll be able to reach the lock, and then he'll be able to use the key to unlock it. So that'll be the first door. And so that's Echad Yerid La'amas HaShechi. So one of them goes down to the Amma of the armpit. Because in other words, you have to stick his arm all the way in to his armpit in order to be able to unlock that door. Then the Echad Peseach Kevan, and the other one opens directly. He goes over to the doors of the Heichel and opens them like the way you'd open any normal lock. So again, then Shmuel didn't understand what that Mishnah meant. And this Hahu Mirabbanan had explained it to him. So now, sometime later, when this Talmid Chacham passed away, then Shmuel ripped his clothes in Avelus for him because he had taught him, as Rabbi Yossi said, Heir Ein of the Mishnah Achas. He had enlightened his eyes as far as the meaning of one Mishnah.
So he got two keys.
So that's it. Now, once he's done with the keys, he puts back the keys wherever they're supposed to go, and that's it. The doors are open for the day. So there, yeah, okay. He was a king, yeah. But nevertheless, he still had Derech Eretz Rachi Teufel. He was Malufi Rabbi Yudori, yeah. Okay. Oma Ola, so in this connection, Ola says, Tamidei Chachamim Sheba Bavel Oimnim Zemit Nezeh. The Tamidei Chachamim in Bavel stand up in honor of one another. In other words, they treat each other like their Rebbe. Rashi explains, because they're all sitting together in the Beis Medrash, they're constantly asking each other questions and answering questions, and therefore everybody ends up learning from everybody else, so each one considers the others to be his Rebbe. So they stand up in honor of one another, recording Zalzeh, and they tear their clothes for Kriya when one of them passed away for the same reason, because they consider the other to be their Rebbe. Marshall points out, you know, we're not even talking about, let's say, if the other person was muflag b'chokhmah, if he was extremely distinguished in his knowledge of Torah, then yeah, you'd have to stand up for him and a person would have to take kriya for him regardless. We're talking about where they're more or less of equal caliber, but nevertheless, and even the guy may be a young Talmid Chacham, but nevertheless, you still stand up in his honor and so forth. Marshall also points out why are we mentioning Dafke and Bavel? So Marsha says the reason is because in Bavel they had no smicha. So now you don't know. You have no way of knowing, is this person already on the level where he would be getting smicha? Because you can only do smicha, the original smicha, ish mipi ish, can be done only in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, in Babel, they didn't have that. So they didn't have as much of a way. You can have a young Talmid Chacham who nevertheless is already of the caliber to be getting smicha. So therefore, mitzvah asafik, they would stand up for one another and tear kriya for one another. As opposed to in Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't have that because it was more obvious. If a person does not have smicha, then it means he's not yet of the age or the caliber to be getting it yet. So therefore, they wouldn't necessarily stand up for him. Marashah says another point as well. Is in Babel, they had a much more combative style of learning. The Gemara tells us that later on in the Masechta, first of all, where Reb Zera fasted many fasts in order to forget the style of learning of the Bavli before he's moving to Eretz Yisrael, and he's going to start learning in the Yerushalmi style. But we find in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and in some other places, actually we had earlier in our Masechta, where Rabba had said something, and Reb Amram openly criticized what he had said to his face, and Rabba gave him a sharp retorts, and we have the whole story over there with the cedar column breaking. So in Babel, they had a much more, it's more of a fight with one another in Torah. Every person is like jumping down the other one's throat with questions and answers and contradictions and whatnot. As opposed to the Yerushalmi, they were more gentle with each other. The Gemara in Sanhedrin refers to that the Gemara there refers to a nevuah of Zechariah at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, when at that point you have, there's the Jews of Eretz Yisrael and you have the Jews of Babel, and he talks about this Makel Noyam and Makel Chovlin. Makel Noyam, the staff of gentleness, and Makel Chovlin, the staff of the damagers and the beaters. And the Gemara explains that refers to the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael and Babel respectively. So therefore, so now the point is, says Beni Hayada, you see in Babel then they seem to not get along very much. Es vohev b'sufa, it seems like there's tremendous enmity between them while they're arguing in Torah. So you would think that maybe they don't like each other. But in fact, the fact is, as Vohev, there is that Ava at the end of it all. And therefore, in token of that, they would take the trouble to stand up in honor of one another and to rise kriya for one another to demonstrate that they have nothing personal against the other person. And this is how the Mohammed Shal Torah works in Babel. Avira to Machim, that may explain why they didn't need such a combative style, yeah. Ben Yoyada goes on to point out another point as well. The Gemara tells us that in Babel, especially the Talmid Chachamim would wear particular clothing that would mark them as Talmid Chachamim. Because, in other words, the point is, in Babel, you have many Amei Aretz, they're not Bnei Torah, they wouldn't necessarily know to respect the Chachamim, so at least like this they can recognize them by their dress and then give them honor. So for the same reason, they would stand up in honor of one another and write kriya for one another, so that, because the hamoin am otherwise don't recognize the other person as a Talmid Chacham in the first place. Or the Inyan Aveda, however, when it comes to a lost object, if there's a situation where his father also lost an object, then the fact is the Mishnah had said that only his Rebbe goes ahead of his father. So then they would only return it first, only if it's Rabbi Muvok, because there you can't be like this when it comes to standing up. Fine, you want to be machmir on yourself, because hey, you want to tear kriya also, but to put him ahead of your father, that you can't do without a good and valid reason. So only if it was Rabbi Muvok, only if it was his real primary Rebbe, not like these examples where they just learn one thing in Torah from one another. Okay. The Gemara continues. Kaboy minei Rav Chista mirav Huna. Rav Chista asks Rav Huna in this connection. Talmid v'tzorech loy Rabbi Mai. What happens if there's someone who's a Talmid of somebody else, but his Rebbe still needs him? Meaning, now, again, in those times, especially when Torah Shabbat Peh was mostly not written yet, then sometimes you would have, there would be facts, there would be Mishnayot, not Mishnayot so much, although all the Amoroyim were expected to know all the Mishnayot, but there would be Braises and teachings of early Amoroyim and so forth, where one Chacham might know it and the other one might not. So you can have somebody who's a Rebbe, he's for example, the Rosh Hashiva, and he's teaching Torah to everybody else, but nevertheless, he has a Talmud, who in that sense is more like a chover to his, this is what we mean when we talk about Talmud chover, is that his Rebbe still needs to ask him, so do you know any Mishnah, do you know any Braiser or any statement from an earlier Amor or whatever on this topic? And then once we have that, then the primary Chacham can go and analyze it and derive new halachas from it and so forth. So that's Talmud v'tzorech loy Rabbi Mai. So his Rebbe has the ability to learn independently, but he doesn't always have all the facts at hand, and he relies on his Talmud sometimes to supply him with that information. So, what would be the din is the would such a Talmud go ahead of the Rav's father in terms of returning an Aveda? So, in other words, in our example, let's say, so Rav Chista is asking about himself, but without saying so in so many words. So, in other words, he means to say, suppose that I, Rav Chista, lost something, and suppose that at the same time your father, Rav Huna, lost something, who would you be obligated to return his lost object first, your father, because he's your father, or me, because you learned certain things in Torah from me? Amalei, so Rav Huna realizes what Rav Chista is getting at. So he answers him, Chista, Chista, Loit Tzrich Malach, I don't need you. At Tzrichas Mi, you need me. You should realize you're the Talmud after all, and you have to have a bittul to your Rebbe, and you have to realize that as much as you know, you still need a Rebbe. So the Gemara continues, Ad Mem Shnin, for the next 40 years, Ikbedi Hadadi, they had a kpeda on one another, Vele Eile Megabe Hadadi, and they did not go to see one another. Because Rav Huna had felt that Rav Chista had kind of insulted him and then not had the proper covered for his Torah by saying that you, Rav Huna, the Rosh Hashiva, depend on me. And Rav Chista also felt slighted by Rav Huna. That's one way of punctuating the sentence. Marsha punctuates the sentence differently. He says, at srichasli, Marsha actually does explain it this way. He says that why 40 years is a long time to keep a kpeda. He says, because the same, we find that when the Jewish people insulted the Shina with the whole story of the Menaglin, for the next 40 years they were nizukim. So the same way over here, for 40 years there was an after effect of this discussion. With that said, a number of the Mephoshim have punctuate the sentence differently, that he says, at srichasli, ad mem shnin, you're going to need me until you've been learning for 40 years. Because as the Gemara says, in other places, a Talmud doesn't understand the full das of his Rebbe until 40 years have passed. And then, according to that, ikpedi adadi would be the beginning of a new sentence, that they had a kpeda, that they had they felt slighted by each other and they didn't see one another. Yosef Rav Chista Boin Tanisa, Rav Chista sat and fasted for 40 fasts, Mishum Becholosh Daite did Rav Huna, because he had made Rav Huna feel bad, and he realized that was an insult to him. Yosef Rav Huna Boin Tanisa, and vice versa, Rav Huna sat and then kept 40 fasts, Mishum Bechashte le Rav Chista, because he suspected Rav Chista of saying something in his own honor, when maybe Taka doesn't mean it about himself, maybe he just means to ask the theoretical question. Talking about this matter of Mikra versus Mishnah versus Talmud, the Gemara continues, Tanan Rabbanan, Ha'oiskim Mikra, people who are occupied with learning Mikra, learning Tanakh, Midah, it's a Midah, it has a benefit to it, the Ena Midah, but it's not really a Midah, because you don't really, there are much better things from it. Rashi points out that again, since the Mishnah and the Gemara were not written in those times, whereas Tanakh already was written, then therefore a person should be spending much more time on Mishnah and Gemara so that he can remember them, otherwise he's apt to forget them. As opposed to Mikra, it's written right there in front of you, so you don't spend that much time on it. Marsha refers over here to the Gemara tells us in Kedushin, the Rambam and the Alter Rebbe bring in Hilchos Talmud Torah, that a person has to divide his time in three between Torah, Mishnah, and Talmud, and the Rambam goes on to say that that's when a person is first starting to learn, but eventually when he graduates to learning Talmud, the analysis of the halachas and the ability to derive new halachas, then he shouldn't spend so much time on Mikra and Mishnah just once in a while so he doesn't forget them, and spend most of his time on Talmud. So then, in that sense, and we're saying over here, midah, it's a midah, there ain't a midah, but there's no specific measure for it, because there's really only a small amount of person. There's really only a small amount that of a person's life that he should be spending on it. In particular, we have Marshav mentions, you have in Pirkei Avos, ben Chomesh Shana L'Mikra, ben Esa Shana L'Mishnah. So primarily, between age 5 and 10 is the time to be working on Mikra. After that, he should already be graduating to Mishnah and then to higher things. So therefore, it's a midah. It's a midah that exists as a primary thing during a person's lifetime, but the ain't a midah, but it's not the midah that a person lasts for very long, because it's really only a small part of his lifetime. Then the Braisa continues, the Mishnah, a person who spends his time learning Mishnah, midah, then that is also a good midah, the noitel alah schar, and he will get schar from Hashem for doing it. Mikra was saying, man, I mean, he'll get some kind of schar, but not nearly as much, because the fact is that the fact is that mikra by itself, there's a limit how much you can learn from it. You can't learn practical halachas from it. There's you can't necessarily get anything practical. Now, it's different when you're learning mikra with mefoshim, by the way. We see, for example, the distinction that, for example, it says, al pi kabbalah, you're not supposed to say mikra at night, but if you're learning it with mefoshim, then that's different, because then it's Torah Shabbat Peh. But the mikra itself, we're saying, is not really getting that much out of it.
They didn't have
Pirush Rashi. Right. But whatever Pirushim, I'm going to go with it. And yeah, that would make a Torah Shabbat Peh. But yeah.
Did they have a mitzvah of
Shnai Mikra? I mean, the Gemara already mentioned Shnai Mikra, so at least it existed in the time of the Gemara. Whether it existed in the time when this Braisa was written, I don't know. Even Yaakov refers to also a point that the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that mikra by itself is also, the problem with it is that then a person is apt to understand the psukim in their simple sense, like the karoyim and the minim do, and that creates bigger problems. As opposed to Mishnah already is already Torah Shabbat Peh, and therefore so now at least he's getting into Torah Shabbat Peh, and there's a true understanding of Torah, and therefore he gets a schar for it. The Talmud, however, when a person learns Talmud, eimcha midah gdola mizu, there is no greater midah than that. So Maharsha says the vote about Noitel Alev Schar is like this. Mikra, we're saying again, a person's primary time to learn it should be between ages 5 and 10. Well, even at 10 years old, he's not yet Bar Mitzvah, so he's not getting a Schar for his mitzvahs yet. As opposed to Mishnah straddles the time when he becomes a Gadol. He learns Mishnah primarily from when he's 10 until he's 15, and the middle of that is his Bar Mitzvah. So at that point, he's Noitel Alev Schar. He starts getting a Schar when he's 13 and older and is learning. It's a midah and the notes of the last time. The Talmud, but when he learns Talmud, which is going to be for the rest of his life, there's no greater midah than that, in the sense it's the best thing to do, because that way a person can actually extract from it the practical halachas and have the true understanding of what the Mishnah means, plus also the fact that it lasts through a person's whole life. In fact, Maharsha mentions, you know, you have the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, hafochba v'hafochba, v'siv uvleiva, and get old and worn out with it. Meaning, in other words, exactly that. Like this, you're learning Mikra for only a relatively short time when you're still young. You're learning Mishnah also when you're still a young bacher. But Talmud, you start at 15 and you never look back. And for the rest of your life, even when you're old and gray, your primary focus is still Talmud. The Alter Rebbe, by the way, in Hilchos Talmud Torah, points out that there's more finer definitions of that once Torah Shabbat Peh started to be written down. For example, Shulchan Aruch, plain Shulchan Aruch, counts as Mishnah. The Nosei Kelim on it count as Gemara because they analyze where the halachas come from and under what circumstances they apply and so forth. Similarly, Alter Rebbe points out that Kabbalah is also an example of Talmud. So there's overlap to a certain extent between the categories, and you have things that kind of move from one category to another. Again, the same way as, for example, Tanakh with Mefoshim is different than Tanakh without Mefoshim. And the Braisa finishes off, Olam Hevi Roth from Mishnah Yosim and Talmud. But you should always be running to Mishnah more than Talmud. So the Gemara says, how gufa kasha? Well, then you seem to have a contradiction over here. Amarta, but Talmud en lecha midig der lemizu. First, you're saying there's no greater thing than Talmud. V'hoder amrit, lo olam have a rots for Mishnah, yosim in a Talmud, but then he's saying that you should run to Mishnah more than Talmud. So what is it? Should he be focusing more on Talmud or more on Mishnah? So the Gemara explains like this. Amar Rav Yochanan, b'nei Rebbe Nishnis Mishnezu. This Mishnah, which is to say Braisa, was taught in the time of Rebbe. Now Rashi gives the whole background over here. What had happened was, in the generations before Rebbe, the three generations before Rebbe, from the time of Shammai and Hillel, Machloikasin started proliferating among the Chachamim. Up until that point, the Gemara tells us in Chagiga, there was next to no Machloikas among the Chachamim. They were very clear-minded, they knew the whole Torah perfectly, and there was only one Machloikas that started in the time of Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, and persisted on from there. But Shammai and Hillel themselves had three Machloikasin, and the Talmudim of Shammai and Hillel had many more. And the point was, then you also have that at this point, the Romans are dominating over the Jewish people, and they're harassing and persecuting and killing them and making zedus and so on and so forth. So they didn't have, you know, the Chachamim didn't have any time to sit down and work out, well, how should we resolve these machlokes in? Once in a while, they had a rare respite, but they didn't have an ongoing thing. Until in Rebbe's time, he was friendly with Antoninus, the Roman emperor. Now they had a long period of tranquility where now Rebbe can gather together the various versions of Mishnayos that are going around. Up until that point, Rashi goes on to explain, every chacham would teach his talmidim what he had learned from his Rebbeim and what he himself had come up with new chidushim or whatever, and each one would teach it in his own lashon. So now Rebbe gathered that all together and first of all put it in a logical order of the different topics and decided what wording should we use for the Mishnah, when should we take a Das Yochid and write it as the opinion of the Chachamim, and so on and so forth. So this was all in Rebbe's times, was all what was happening. So now, when Rebbe taught this point that you need Talmud, that Talmud is the best thing, Shtavki Kol Alma Masnisin, everybody started abandoning the Mishnayos and reviewing the Mishnayos to know them, V'ozlu Bosa Talmuda, and they started turning to Talmud to the analysis of it. Hodu Dorish Lahu. So now Rebbe had the Darish in them, have a Olam, have a Roth the Mishnah, yes, not Talmud, always be running to the Mishnah more than the Talmud, because the fact is, we don't want the Mishnayos to get mixed up. Again, they're still Baal Peh. You don't want to have that the opinions are going to be mixed up, and or the result, when the Mishnah says this is Chayav, this is Potter, etc., is going to be mixed up. You have to have those facts straight before you get to Talmud, so therefore he's telling them to always be running to the Mishnah but ahead of Talmud, because you need to have the Mishnayos well in hand before you start with Talmud. Marashah mentions over here the word rots also suggests like the fast kind of learning that people do when they're younger, where they skim through the material quickly, and it also suggests the Gemara that talks about that when you bring a boy early to cheder, then everybody else, his friends are chasing after and running after him to catch up in knowledge of Torah, and they don't necessarily catch up to him. So therefore, so heavy rots for Mishnah, when a person is younger, you should be focusing on Mishnah and not yet on Talmud, because Talmud you need Yishuv Adas. It's interesting, the Maharal in his times was also very big on the point. When the Mishnah says Ben Chomesh Shana L'Mikra, Ben Esa Shana L'Mishnah, that's how it has to be. And he kind of spearheaded the opening of a cheder in Prague following that. The Tosfos Yom Tov, also the Talmud of the Maharal, the reason why what motivated him to write his Pirush on Mishnayos was based on that, and the Maharal is telling people you have to focus more on Mishnayos. Lamaise, in most Jewish communities, they didn't do that. And they often did start learning Gemara, as we do even nowadays, when the kids are relatively young. One reason the Achronim talk about is because the fact is, with the troubles of Golos, you don't always know that a kid is going to have the ability to sit and learn uninterruptedly until he's 15 and is old enough for Gemara, and you want to expose Gemara to him when he still has a chance to learn. But the Maharal didn't like that, and he Taka insisted that they should only start it after they have the Mishnayos thoroughly well in hand. Because of the Mishnayos he learned, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, no, but that's what we're saying, because Mishnah is Osius Neshama, and we're saying it's the fundamentals, yeah. Alright, Yoimiyam Mashiach Ugo'olach of Zayin Cheshvan. So we have nowadays, that Rebbe was talking about, we have the shleimus of Yefutza minus Secha Chutza in all corners of the earth, and in a way that a person's Seichel can understand, even when a person is in the lowest faraway place. And even you have Pnimius HaTorah is being translated into various languages. At that time, they were publishing the Tanya in Russian and so forth. And then you have it. There's more and more light coming into the world of Torah Sachsidus. And then when the Rebbe was talking about this, at the end of Nun Aleph, then they'd recently published the first Tanya in Braille for blind people, meaning that now you have it. Not only sighted people can learn Pnimius HaTorah and benefit from the Ur of it, but even blind people. Okay, continuing on halachas of going to the bathroom. So when a person is wiping, and back then they didn't have toilet paper, so he has to be careful not to use something that's not smooth. For example, you have a shard of earthenware that's not smooth, because then he may cut himself or he may tear something out loose or whatever. In fact, on Shabbos, the Gemara tells us, you're allowed to handle small stones to use them for that purpose, even though normally stones are mukta. And that's even if a person does have a piece of earthenware in front of him, which would not be mukta. Nevertheless, he can use the stones in order that he doesn't injure himself. The Gemara goes on to say there, he can take in a lot of those stones, even a handful, and use them one after another until the area comes out clean. On weekdays also, and nowadays when you're using toilet paper, once it comes out clean, then you don't need to do anything. You don't need to do anything more because at that point, it has to be clean enough that when you're sitting, nothing should be visible. So now, if nothing comes out on the paper, then you know it's clean. However, midas chasidus is to rinse with water, and that way the area is for sure clean.